Breaking down the top NBA draft prospects across the globe, you're listening to the Prospect Podcast with Ethan Piotta and Alex Brown. And welcome back to another edition of the Prospect Podcast. I'm Ethan Piotta, joined today by Alex Brown. Alex, how's it going?
It's going well, man. How about yourself?
Going pretty well. Just again, another episode of the Prospect Podcast for you guys, bi-weekly now. We're getting the content out there. You guys are supporting it. It's just great teamwork, isn't it? It's just like Patrick Williams quads going hand in hand or quad and thigh and thigh.
We love to see that. Yeah.
So today we have a really fun episode, and honestly, this is an episode that, you know, we could be the most wrong on when we look back on in a few years, because we've talked and wings, we're talking about wings in the 2020 NBA draft class, and wings are the hardest, archetype or position ultimately evaluate for me. And I know for you as well, Alex, and it's just kind of due to their high variance. So right off the bat, you know, why are wings so difficult to evaluate? Why is it so tough to project their value or, you know, what they could become?
Well, in my opinion, the thing that's so difficult about wings is, you know, you kind of glossed over it, was the seemingly high variance they have, because you get a lot of guys that are, you know, in that 6'7", the 6'9" range that have a wing skill set that can shoot the ball, you know, shoot dribble pass, defend. And you just get the sense that if they put it all together, you know, they could be a star, or they could be that good, because they don't have something like height holding them back, and or athleticism in some cases. So it always looks like the sky's the limit to me, because they don't need to be as skilled as, say, or as skill reliant, for example, as like a, you know, point guard, or as size reliant as some centers, or they just kind of have, they're in this strange in between for me, and I'm still really, really learning how to evaluate. Because I often find myself rather over-optimistic on some wings. So I'm trying to be a little more cynical this year, you know, just protect myself.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. That's what I'm feeling.
And when you look at the NBA, you know, like, you can make an argument that the best players, the most heliocentric players, are wings. Durant, Kawhi, LeBron.
Yeah, or at least Giannis. Wing size.
Right, wing size, whatever you – I mean, obviously those guys have the ability to bring the ball up the court when we're talking about LeBron and we're talking about Giannis and play that point forward role. But, you know, that, you know, old school small forward position, which many of these guys are listed at, is extremely valuable, and it's highly variant in my opinion. There's often a huge drop-off between, say, a Kevin Durant and, you know, Kawhi, LeBron – in Giannis class, and then you kind of go to guys that are just higher value plays like Robert Covington, or, you know, TJ Warren or others. I'm just thinking off the bat here, which is kind of, you know, why, in my opinion, it's really difficult to evaluate wings, because, like you said, such high variance. And it's, you know, I think this particular archetype, this particular position, brings a lot of different directions of value to an NBA team.
Yeah, and they're very, you know, wings are kind of the cornerstone of defensive schemes these days, unless you have a great rim protector, of course. But, like, you need, I know we've mentioned it in multiple episodes, you need multiple big wings that can defend and, you know, shoot and stretch the floor to really be a competitive team these days. Exactly. Or guys that can even play above their size against those types of wings. So it's one of the most important positions in the modern game, because everyone's going – well, not everyone, of course, but many teams are going towards that big initiator or helio type of offense. And having multiple guys that can step up and defend those guys, as well as the other wings on the floor, you know, that's going to be a valuable commodity to have. And so we tend to kind of – I suppose have a sort of bias towards wing prospects, because we see them for all their potential uses, because the versatility of the wing position is its calling card.
Yep. I agree with you there. And a lot of the wings in this class, just looking at the guys that we have, you know, whether that's Patrick Williams or Devin Vassell, Denny Avdia, Isaac Okoro, they kind of fit into that sector of players who I don't project by any means to be heliocentric or primary initiator, but guys who could make an immense value if they are in the right situation. And honestly, you can make the argument that they are situation proof with their skill set, that they could come into any team, any setting, against any opponent and make a positive impact with their versatility and with their, you know, their core skills of being able to shoot and defend multiple positions. And you know, in some cases have other skills like playmaking or self-creation that differentiates themselves, but, you know, providing value in that way. And I think with this class, it could make, you know, some of these guys really high value plays, really special contributors on NBA teams, while not ever scoring, say, over 15 to 20 points per game.
Right. I totally agree. And that's why the wing is such an impactful position in the modern game.
Agree with you there. So starting off, number one, we've talked about this guy a lot. I listed him at 5 in my most recent big board, and I've dropped on him one or two spots since then. But Patrick Williams, Quad King, we have him kind of listed at that classic big wing. We, you know, the classic, you need two or three of Patrick Williams on your team to be able to shut down LeBron. Or Kevin Durant, if you will. But Patrick Williams, you mentioned that you dropped on him a little bit, Alex. Tell me why.
Well, I've just been lowering a little bit on, again, his potential versatility. I'm not all the way there in his defense. I think a guy like Vassell would provide more value. But what Pat Will has is a great base to build upon. I'm just not sure we can build it to the versatility some are expecting from him. So I'm a little more risk averse as a scout, but I'm just not seeing his versatility develop as quickly as many would want it to for him to provide top five value, for example. I do think he's going to be a valuable kind of a four defender. I just don't see him as a guy that's going to be checking a lot of guards. I think he's going to be a valuable rotating rim protector, you know, a guy that can use his strength to kind of improve his versatility. But I just think, in comparison to some of the other defensive wings, if that's what you're going to hang your hat on, I would go with somebody else that has more potential versatility.
Yeah, I respect that, and I'm notably higher on Pat Will. I'm going to stay that way because I think he has a remarkable skill set. He's the one guy other than Poku in this draft that I really want to hit on and say, yes, like, I got him right. My evaluation was correct. But, again, I see your point of, you know, his biggest calling card is the defensive versatility. With Pat Will, he's being labeled as a guy that could come into the league and guard positions 1 through 4. Now, I don't know how. I don't see it happening from day one, but I do hang my hat on the fact that, you know, watching a lot of him this year at FSU, every single game he was guarding the opposing team's point guard. Leonard Hamilton put him in positions to succeed. I believe more often than not he did succeed, and there are flashes, there are clips of his hips kind of coming into effect. But I really do think that he uses his frame, his feet, to slide and beat guys to spots. I think he's a terrific anticipatory defender. You know, gets his hands on balls. He's not someone that let me be clear. He's not someone that I'd ever want guarding the opposing point guard in the NBA. However, I can see him guarding big twos, you know, primary threes, and obviously fours at that next level, which I do think provides a lot of value, even if he's not guarding the opposing point guard like some are fantasizing him to be able to do. And I'm kind of just hanging my hat on that with Pat Will. I don't think he needs tremendous hips to be able to stay in front of a LeBron type archetype. And obviously it's going to come with development, but I think all the other skills that he has, especially defensively, are going to help him out greatly.
Yeah. And they really could. Again, what I like about Patrick Williams is he has a great base to build upon. He has good intangibles from what I've heard, and you know, he can make an impact as a defensive playmaker as well, relatively, as well as being a relatively low usage, low maintenance offensive option. So I like him. I just don't think he's going to be as impactful as a guy like Vassell or Coro potentially. I still like him. I just don't think he's top five value right now. But I'm comfortable top 20, top 18. Right. Yeah, I'm just not all the way there. I'm not as optimistic. I'm trying to check myself and be a little more cynical on it. But
yeah, because
I see what you see that he could be. I'm just like, I'm not all the way there.
Right, makes sense. And you know, we didn't even talk about offense. I mean, offensively, this is a guy that he's. First of all, he's one of the youngest players in the draft besides Poku. And, you know, you mentioned it. Great base to build upon. I personally, this is different for some people. I buy his shot. I buy him becoming
I buy his shot too.
A borderline 40% three-point shooter, albeit on not extremely high volume, but someone that is able to space the floor competently. And I love the part of his game that is – Patrick Williams as the pick and roll ball handler. I think that is so valuable to an NBA team. It's just another dimension of offense that can be unlocked. And it really reminds me of kind of like a Josh Smith-esque. If you ever saw Josh Smith running the pick and roll, even in Houston with Dwight Howard, or I mean, he even did it back with Detroit in his earlier years, but kind of in that role, you don't see many guys like that. I love that part of his game. And I think it's just added to what he can bring offensively as an offensive rebounder, as a tertiary playmaker, and, you know, as a borderline 40% shooter. I think his skill set and what he could bring to the table, and I completely respect where you're coming from on him, trying to be a little bit more cynical because there are concerns. I think his skill set is top five, top six, top seven in this draft combined with his intangibles, his age, and all the rest of it.
I get it. I see that. I'm just not there.
Right. So his teammate, though, that we kind of glossed over, and this is our first time talking about Devin Vassell in the Prospect Podcast.
Yes, but he's kind of
he's one of my favorites for this year, and his skill set is extremely intriguing. I think he's one of those guys that there is virtually no chance that he fails with what he's going to bring to the table. He's going to be a player for some NBA team, and I'm a really big fan of his skill set. So Devin Vassell, what makes him one of the best wings in this class?
Well, in my opinion, what's so great about Devin Vassell? First of all, he can kind of play that combo wing spot, like the two or the three. He can score from all three levels. He really shot the ball well this year on improved volume. He is a wonderful team defender. He is probably some of the best instincts and overall impact defensively, especially off the ball, in this class. I think he's going to provide value as like a third option offensively. I don't really see him getting to that full-on creator with, you know, shot creation and self-creation packages. But he's going to be like a perfect role player and a perfect linking wing on almost any team, which is why he's not going to fail, is because he can go anywhere and have that strong impact. You know, just looking at some of his stats from this year, you know, the guy he turned the ball over at a 6% rate, which is crazy low. He had a 4% block rate, 2.8% steal rate. And he had, you know, he was a career plus 10, or almost plus 11 BPM. So it's just, wow. You know, and that yeah. was double what Patrick Williams was. So right. I really love his defensive impact, especially off the ball. You know, team defense is super important at the NBA. And that's how you really can make a major impact. But right. Yeah, I just think, again, great base to build upon, awesome instincts. I don't see a way he fails, even if he doesn't become a self-creator. You know, he could average 9 points a game and a rebound or, you know, whatever, but he's going to be a winning player that can stretch the floor.
Yeah, I agree with you there. And, you know, again, it's just you mentioned the turnover percentage too, which is awesome. And he got it down 2% from last year as a freshman as well. And he did it all on 20% usage, which is not too shabby. And, you know, I mean, again, Vassell is – he's someone – he's I think he's 6'7", you know, by the way that – I'm waiting for his official measurements because he's listed as 6'6 or 6'5 in some cases. But I really think 6'7 is – I really think 6'7 is his correct height. You know, and he's – you mentioned it – always in the right place on defense. He's one of the best – he is the best team defender, help defender, off-ball defender, all three in the 2020 NBA draft class. I firmly believe that. He wrecked so many game plans this year by just being in the right spot. By making one or two plays that disrupted an offense that you literally could not force penetration to his side because he was going to either bluff and recover, or he was going to stunt you, or he was going to just take the ball out of your hands and ruin your morale, ruin your game plan. I saw it against Duke multiple times. I think, you know, I Trey Jones drove his way one time in the first half and then never did it again. And I think that's just so indicative of the impact that he could provide on that end. And not to mention, this is a guy who is going to be a really good shooter at the next level as well. Not only was he off the catch excellent, he was also really solid off the dribble as a pull-up shooter. I don't know how much that translates. He showed flashes of extreme shot creation sometimes at Florida State. I don't buy him as someone that who's going to consistently create his own shot at the NBA level, but just being able to knock down threes and space the floor is enough value to warrant a top 10 pick on Devin Vassell.
Yeah. With his defensive value, definitely. And you know, just to drive the point home, I don't think he's going to be a self creator. I think there's something there to work with as like a tertiary or, you know, maybe a fourth option creator. But, you know, he had a rather low free throw rate. He doesn't get to line very often. You know, he's kind of a low volume guy in general. And while that is, you know, part of FSU because they had so many great wings and guards that, you know, they really distributed the ball well. But I just don't see him being a creator. I think he's going to be the best 3-and-D wing out of this class regarding those two, like, metrics, I guess. But I see him having kind of a Mikal Bridges impact.
Yep.
You know, not really comparing the two, but, you know, 6'7", kind of thin.
Yep.
But can really, really make awesome defensive plays and space the floor. So that's kind of the impact I see for Devin Vassell. And Mikal Bridges is a winner, you know. So 100%. I think finding a guy in that archetype is awesome. And if you can get a guy that's going to impact winning like Vassell without the, you know, needing a lot of shots, or that's going to be really valuable. That's why I like so much about Devin Vassell.
I think, you know, you look at him and he's one of the guys that's going to be a 10-year starter regardless in the NBA, which is,
or like, I mean, a high rotation at least.
Right, and a high rotation fringe 10-year starter, 10-year, you know, 10-year guy that is going to stick around, and he's going to make an impact year in and year out. And I like the Mikal Bridges, you know, player illusion. Not player comp, player illusion. I kind of see Robert Covington in that same mold as well. Covington's a little bit more filled out, But just in terms of doing the same things on the basketball court, and, you know, being able to shoot the three at a high clip and guard multiple positions and just be a game wrecker on that defensive end, even if it doesn't always show up in the stat sheet, you know, he's going to provide value in one way or another. But number three here that we're talking about, this is your guy, Alex. So this is your time to shine. Denny Avdia. We've been waiting to bring Denny on the show. And, you know, I think he's a guy that's going to just rise so much between now and October because he's been playing so well, you know, with Maccabi in this downtime recently. And we've seen so many improvements to his game with his shot, and just, you know, other things as well. So Denny Avdia is going to be, I think, kind of in that Vassell range of a really good high impact prospect. You still have him number two?
I still have him number two. And I've had him number two for a while, kind of before they, I've kind of flipped him and LaMelo in my top three, but I've had him there kind of before they started playing in the Israeli league and getting their competition back up again. I don't want people to fall to recency bias because nobody else has really been playing. So of course, Avdia's highlights are going to be in the spotlight, but also keep in mind level of competition. He's on by far the best team in the Israeli league.
Right.
But there is still a lot to like in Denny Avdia, and his shot improvements, they've been there so far. And I think that's going to make teams really optimistic about, you know, his potential moving forward. Because my two biggest swing skills for him, when I scouted, when I put my report out on him back in, I think it was December. I've updated it since, of course. Check it out. Check it out. Were his strength and his shooting. And both of which he's, you know, I wouldn't say they're elite by any means, but he's improved. He's clearly improved, and he has a passion for improving them. Like, if you follow Denny on Instagram, like, his confidence is going through the roof.
He's so swaggy.
And how many swaggy 6'9" playmakers that can, you know, play that glue guy role, defend multiple positions, be an interior defender and check point guards in some cases. Like, how many guys like that come around? It's pretty rare to find a guy with Denny Avdia's skill set at 6'9" with his open court speed and passing skills. He is a phenomenal passer, and just his crazy confidence. And I think his shot's only going to get better. Every time I've watched him, I've never thought, like, man, this guy won't be able to shoot.
Right.
Because, you know, you get that vibe about some people. I never get that with Denny Avdia. I think he's going to be a good shooter. I think the indicators are all pointing up right now. And, I'm just a huge Denny Avdia fan. I think he's going to be a really impactful guy on both ends as a linking player that can do a little secondary bit of everything.
Right.
And that's so rare to find in a 6'9" wing.
And so valuable too. And I mean, I just want to touch on the shot real fast because everything, I think his upper body is just, it's otherworldly, the improvements that he's made on his shot. And I'm specifically focusing, talking about his upper body because the release point, his release time, you know, his elbow placement have all made noticeable strides in just the past year alone. And the one thing I'm waiting for is for him to get just become consistent with the lower body.
I know,
because it's gonna, it flails and it goes everywhere, and you want the footwork and you know, the skill that he has with his feet and with his balance to all come together. And I think that's the thing about Avdia, is that he still has time for that to you know, come to fruition and all come together, and it's going to make him a really solid prospect. Again, he's my glue guy in this class. You mentioned it. I've kind of been rolling with him at that. I see him as that glue guy. Again, someone who, like I mentioned in the opening about some of the wings in this class, someone who's situation proof. He's going to fit wherever he goes because of all the good things that he can do on a basketball court. And that's just to keep it short.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. You know, he can just do a lot of everything and he can do it well. And I think the strides he's made on his weaknesses are notable. And I think that teams are going to take that into account when placing him in a role at the next level. I don't see him being a non-shooter. It's hard to see a guy with his versatility fail. And to find somebody that rare, I mean, that rare of an archetype is, it's too much for me to push him outside of my top three.
You're going to see a lot of people, not casual, but, you know, even extremely, you know, passionate NBA fans that don't follow the draft process all too close. They're going to be pleasantly surprised, I think, when you see someone like Denny come into the league, because he's not the typical international prospect, in my opinion. You know, you'd expect him to just be able to be a knockdown shooter with it, you know, and it's all kind of flipped. He just does everything well. He's hard-nosed on defense. He brings another level of energy to the court and off the court as well. And so I'm truly looking forward to his NBA future. I think, like Vassell, like Pat Will, I'm sticking with Pat Will, all three deserve top 10, 100% top 10 consideration and should be picked in the top 10.
Yeah, I agree. The thing also I want to point out about Avdija before we move on to Isaac Okoro is Avdija has potential to be like a secondary or even at very, very least a tertiary big initiator. You know, he's not going to be a Helio, but he's going to be a guy that can handle the ball at 6'9" and, you know, playmake. And his self-creation is going to need a lot of work, and his footwork, of course, but I think he'll get there. I don't really want him being a creator, as far as shot creator, but I want him to handle the ball. I want him to pass. I want him to constantly be manipulating mismatches and running pick and roll, and I just want him involved. You know,
right. So I think before we get onto Okoro, like just one point, that's where we do differentiate, because I have Avdija, you know, late top 10, you have him top 2. And I think it's because you truly believe in that secondary, you know, big initiator kind of role for him. And I don't think he gets there. And that's not, you know, a knock on the prospect. I'm not there on him in terms of, his self-creation ability, playmaking ability, all the way like you are. And I think that's just – it's important to point out that, yes, I feel like we do agree on many points of his game and many of the aspects of his game, but that is where we differentiate. If it just sounds like we're just complimenting each other and we're going, you know, back and forth on Avdija, like why wouldn't I have him top two? But I just wanted to point that out because I think it's important to note that that is where we fundamentally separate, in my opinion.
I understand that. And the thing to note about Avdija, and it's a little similar to Killian Hayes. He mostly played on the ball growing up from the games I watched in like U16 or like some of the lower leagues. And he really had to learn to play off the ball for the first time this year, like truly off the ball at Maccabi. So I think people are starting, and correct me if I'm wrong, but you know, some people are starting to forget that he was – you know, some guys were listing him as a point guard back in the day. And, you know, you just got to remember, you know, he can handle the ball. He can play make. If you watch him at, like, the basketball without borders camp, like, he was throwing crazy full court passes. Like, it was beautiful to watch. Like, I remember watching it and just being like, oof, like that was Lonzo-esque or, you know. So don't sleep on his playmaking ability. But I totally get the non-creator option. I don't really think he's going to be a shot creator. He's going to be a guy that can break down defense and pick and roll and utilize mismatches. But
makes sense.
Yeah, that's where I am. That's where I'm at.
Makes sense. And one more thing. No, I'm just kidding. Not one more thing. moving on to Isaac Okoro. And I think he's just so interesting here. And this is kind of the last, I would say, of the maybe tier one, if you will, of wings. And obviously you can, you know, debate where certain guys go or, you know, we might have certain guys out of this tier. But I think this is kind of – there's a substantial drop between the next crop of wings, if you will. Or not substantial, but a noticeable. And, I, you know, Isaac Okoro is his defensive talent is probably one of the best individual elite skills in the 2020 NBA draft class. And I think that is something that's extremely, extremely valuable and, you know, something that he can not only entirely rely on at the NBA level, but, you know, could just be the predecessor for how his career goes and could be what he kind of makes his name out to be is just an elite defender. And there are questions about, you know, the shot, and it's the biggest swing skill arguably out of any draft prospect that here is, you know, will that will his shot come around? Will it become passable? Will he be able to be playable, you know, and knock down open three-pointers? But, you know, I just think his defensive talent and his ability to lock in on that end is among the elite, not only in this class, but in recent draft classes.
Yeah, I love his defensive ability. The thing that I really like about his game is his maturity and his intangibles. I mean, Bruce Pearl definitely said, I mean, he said multiple times, like, the dude's a senior. You know, he's an 18-year-old senior. So, you know, I love guys like that that are going to know their role. They're going to impact winning that way. And I think his shot could come around. You know, you saw flashes of a step back, you know, and that's all they were was flashes. But really got to the rim well offensively, finished as, you know, I think he's going to be a slasher and, you know, defender from day one. But he has some tertiary playmaking equity. He has, you know, if he can only just shoot the ball at like a 34, you know, just a passable rate. He's going to be a really impactful defender that's going to help a winning team. And that's what you need. You know, it's hard to pass on a guy like that.
I agree with you there. And I love to kind of think about him fitting into that Iguodala role, if you will, and that's Iguodala if, you know, he was later in his career, which is still extremely valuable because Iguodala on the 76ers was an absolute killer. Let's not get it twisted here. I'm just kidding. But no, Iguodala on the Sixers was a different player than he was on, say, the Warriors. And, you know, I even just – but, again, fitting into that kind of role and, like you said, just becoming passable from three is so valuable and so needed for Isaac Okoro because he has, you know – he has the athleticism and he has, you know, a decent finishing package and a really underrated playmaking arsenal that, you know, could bring some, like you said, offensive equity to the table if he's able to really just knock down the outside shot.
Yeah. And look what that did for, like, Marcus Smart, you know, for the value he provided. And he's not that great of a shooter, but he can provide just enough value to be passable.
And respectable, too.
Exactly, and that's what Okoro needs to get to. But he's going to be in that type of impactful role, and that's a very rare find and a very valuable one. And with the upside he has, too, it's like, you know, he's a top 10, top 12 guy for me.
Yeah, I haven't met 12.
I think he's 7 for me right now, maybe 8, one to two. But, yeah, big fan of Okoro.
Yep, for sure. And we're going to kind of move on here because we do have a lot of wings to get through.
Yeah, we got to speed.
Hopefully. We, you know, and I think that's what we plan to do is kind of just talk about the big three of Pat Will and Vassell and Abdia and even Okoro championship four. Yeah. Big four. Right. And then kind of just gloss over the next crop of guys. So first off, Aaron Nesmith, super interesting prospect here. Obviously just had an out of this world shooting season at Vanderbilt. 52% on, I believe it was 7 or 8 attempts per game before his season was unfortunately cut short. But again,
23 points a game to 53 or 52% shooting from deep.
Another guy with
8 attempts.
Yeah, exactly. Another wing with an elite skill, which is elite shooting. And we kind of mentioned it earlier, but you know, that elite shooting will, you know, turn into shooting gravity that is valuable on an NBA offense and movement shooting and coming off screens. Where I do fall on Nesmith is his lack of everything else. And that's what has me a little bit lower on him than others.
Yeah. I don't think his defense is going to be anything more than neutral, or even just a plus one or whatever. But he's a project everywhere else. I think he has some. I mean, what I'm drafting Neesmith for would be to have him run off screens, be constantly moving on the perimeter, and knocking down threes at a high rate.
JJ Redick.
But when he's not doing that, what is he doing?
Yes, exactly.
And that's what teams are going to have to weigh when, you know, taking into account this elite skill, because you could build him into a passable defender. I mean, he's a 6'6", you know, 2'3", 3'2", and, you know, a guy that can score from all three levels passably, mostly at the rim and at the rim decently and from range. So, yeah, it's really just how much faith do you have in developing his ancillary skills.
And how much do you need shooting, I think, is another big thing. Like, how much do you just need the general skill of shooting on your roster? Because, yeah, then it is valuable. But, again, if you're drafting him to be a 3-and-D wing, you're not – I mean, yeah, I don't think you're not going to get that. Like, you're just not – he's good size, and maybe he turns into a good defender, but he's never in the right place in help defense and off-ball defense, which is something that I would hope would be a semi-elite skill, because he's not good on the ball either. Yeah. And so normally guys who aren't good on the ball would have to hang their hat on, okay, well, I'm good off the ball and I can provide an impact that way. But I haven't seen that, which isn't a great sign. And like you said, if he's not knocking down threes, if he's not an elite, elite three-point shooter, not one of the best in the NBA, it's going to be hard to play him at times. Because even, you know, we've seen in the past, some of the best three-point shooters in the NBA are not guys that get big minutes, because they're ultimately at risk of being a negative because of, you know, the lack of defensive value and other value that they can provide on a basketball court.
Yeah, and so what you have with Neesmith is you have a guy with a high floor that's going to, at least seemingly high floor, because he has that elite skill to hang his hat on. Teams are going to put him on the floor to stretch the floor and shoot it at a high clip. But if he wants to be anything more than the bench shooter, the guy that's going to come in and bury some threes off the bench, he's going to need to develop those other skills, especially defensively, if he wants to be anything more than a role player, a high op or a high rotation guy.
Primarily defensively.
Definitely. Yeah. That's where I'm at. So glad we're on the same page with you.
Yeah, I agree with you there. Because a lot of people have moved him up extremely high and kind of have rode with that wave of moving Neesmith all the way up. But I think he's just right at that 25 to 30 range, or 20 to 25 range for me. And that's and that's where I'm most comfortable with keeping him.
I get that. I think he's in the top 20 for me still, just because I think he has a valuable skill to build around. But I agree with you. Yeah. Yeah, I totally see the argument both ways.
Another guy that's kind of like Neesmith in terms of just having the elite shooting skill, but Desmond Bane here from TCU, and we included him in this wing category because he's just a big body and you know, he does handle the ball, but he also has, I think, the ability to play at the wing level in the NBA. With his defensive
that
versatility.
2-3 spot.
Yeah, at that two, his ability to guard twos and threes at the next level, and maybe ones and twos, is certainly interesting. And my argument for Bane, why I have him higher than Neesmith, is because I honestly think that his package and his level of shooting off the dribble, off the catch, in a four-year sample size at TCU, you know, could possibly even be greater than what Neesmith displayed at Vanderbilt in just a 16-game sample size. And not to mention, Bane has playmaking chops. And I mean, Desmond Bane is just he's just great. And he's also, I just think, a dog on defense. So the difference is that Bane has the skills
he
that
has
Neesmith
these other
needs
skills
to develop. That's the skills that Neesmith needs to develop. And I think also you can comfortably put the ball in his hands and have him initiate offense sometimes, not all the time, but sometimes, and you know, just deploy him in a number of different offensive roles that will yield positive impact, and that makes him top 20 for me easily.
Yeah, and he's a guy that I know next week we're going to be talking about, you know, kind of the two guards of the class, guys that we classify. I think we could fit him into that category as well. And that's why we're not talking about like Anthony Edwards or any of those other guys. But yeah, I really like Baines shooting. I think his defense is definitely going to be more passable initially. I think Neesmith has – he can still build a lot. But, you know, Baines is going to be a guy where you can put the ball in his hands. He's going to be able to create for others, kind of get his own shot a little easier. He's going to have a more immediate impact. And, you know, as a 6'6", 6'5", you know, 2'3", that can shoot 40-something, you know, percent from deep, that's a valuable thing to have. The one thing I'm down on in Bane is his ability to get to the line. He had one of the lowest free throw rates of the guys I scouted. I mean, I think it was like a 13.1% free throw rate, which is pretty bad.
Right.
And you know, he shot less than two free throws a game on his career. So it's like, unless he's shooting the ball really, really, you know, which I think he's going to be a great shooter regardless. I don't think he's going to be anything much more than like an impactful glue guy wing, because I don't think he has the self-creation. I think he's going to be able to, you know, be that a better Denzel Valentine role, you know, a guy that's going to be a big, kind of a larger initiator that can, you know, have shooting gravity and, you know, pass the ball to
value highlight in different ways.
Yeah. Not a comparison, of course, but just a similar role. I think you're going to see them play. But Bane will play it at a higher level because he's a much, much better athlete.
Yeah, I agree with you there. That's a good point. And he does lack that overall, you know, next level self-creation ability. And I'm sure you'll see flashes of it, but will it ever be an elite skill that you can run an offense through? Absolutely not, in my opinion. So yeah, that's good on Bane. Next guy here, super interesting, and he's one that can fluctuate from lottery level to like 40s and 30s on some board, and I don't understand it because I think he's got a pretty safe skill set with what he's shown in his 1 year at U of A and even in high school. But Josh Green, really, really interesting prospect. And someone that I want to hear your thoughts on, because I feel like we've never talked about him before.
Yeah, so I did a report on Green back in, I think it was maybe February or January. And the main thing that stuck out to me was lockdown defense. And he has an argument to be in that top tier of defense. I think he should be in the top tier of defenders in this draft class because he's that good on the ball. And he locks in. He's constantly engaged. He's a good locker room presence. He's motivated defensively. He's an excellent athlete for a wing. I think he has a lot of room to grow too. So seeing the impactful defense he provided this year, as something to hang his hat on moving forward, was huge for me. Because his offense was a work in progress. And if you look at just the numbers in general, they don't necessarily suggest that. You know, he was a 36% three-point shooter, 12 points a game, you know, 3 assists, 5 rebounds. Nothing
pretty
special.
Pretty standard skill set.
Yeah, pretty standard.
Stat sheet.
Yeah, exactly. But he has that defense to hang his hat on as a high-floor guy. And that's really valuable to have going into this draft class because – you know, wings that are there, I think it'll be 19. Well, draft night's different now, of course, but he would have been 19 and a half on draft night. And as a guy that's that motivated and that engaged defensively, it's a rare thing to find. And his offense is a work in progress, but there's some flashes there. You know, he has good instincts as a playmaker. He just really needs to work on his shot. I think there's a lot of mechanical things that need to be fixed. And his finishing versatility, the guy's got no left hand around the rim at all. Yep. But I think he's a guy, though, that's going to be able to play a three-position defense on the perimeter, you know, 1 through 3. And that's what he's going to hang his hat on while he develops his offensive skill set.
For sure. And that's value. Being able to guard those three positions on the perimeter is really, really solid value for any NBA team. And with Josh Green, I mean, let's stop. I've seen it. Let's stop the questions about, like, I've seen like rare questions about his athleticism and like because of some of his movements and his like shin angle and stuff. He's an athlete. Okay. Like he's going to be able to move, and his clear deficiencies are being able to knock down the three. Like you said, the mechanics are everywhere. They change every time he shoots.
Really, and he refuses lower body.
Yeah. Really, really strange the way that his legs fold inwards, I believe.
That's odd.
So, yeah, right. So he's got it. That's, again, probably one of his biggest swing skills is becoming that knockdown three-point shooter, if you will, because that will take his game to the next level. But, again, being such a solid defender and athlete like he is, he's got a pretty safe floor, in my opinion. And also, I'd like to point out, I think he has one of the most underrated skills in this class, which is his playmaking. I think he's a really smart playmaker and just wasn't given – the opportunity to really show that this year in a heavily criticized U of A system under Sean Miller. I mean, I think if he was in a different system, we'd probably be seeing more playmaking praise for Josh Green, because I think he was a really smart playmaker and decisive with the ball this year. And I that's something that stood out.
Yeah, I think despite only averaging like 2.5 assists per game, he had a lot of impressive instinct flashes for a guy that can be a secondary or a tertiary passer or playmaker. And he was an expert at like catching passes midair and just like finding somebody.
Exactly.
You know, just really quick decision-making with, you know, he had kind of a keen understanding of at times, you know, there's some value there. And I think that's something worth tapping into as his scoring gravity hopefully develops, because I think you could have a lot of value with that as a fallback skill.
Yep.
So I think the argument for Green being a top guy is he has all these really great skills to fall back on. And it's just, can we really fix his, which on paper is not bad. It's kind of his shooting.
Mechanics.
And on paper, it wasn't bad, but I've tried to, you know, sometimes when I evaluate a player's shot, I try to replicate it for myself.
Right.
And while I haven't really been able to do that this year because I've had a broken foot for like the last few months, I've tried to do Josh Green's shot, and it's I cannot do it at all.
It's like Lonzo.
It's just like I can't even see how Lonzo's works, but I cannot bend my knees like that, and I'm a spring jumper.
It's really interesting. It's really interesting.
Because I do that when I go for, you know, try to dunk or anything. You know, I'll bend my knees in like that to get more spring. But on a shot, like, I just don't get the point of that. It didn't help me at all. Like, I was more comfortable shooting with Tyrese Halliburton's shot.
And like, I'd be more comfortable with my legs the other way.
It's like, I just did not get it at all. So definitely a mechanical overhaul is needed, I think, to really tap into some value shooting. But it's going to be a Lonzo overhaul in his lower body, because it's bad.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, I'm just trying to think of times when I even bend my legs like that. I think it was like freshman or sophomore year when I was squatting. Like maybe you kind of.
That's not good.
Inward bend, right. So, you know, hopefully I've made improvements by now, but I'm not going to. Dive deeper into that. But definitely interesting. I like the point about you trying to replicate guy shots. You should make a video on that. Just everyone.
I thought about doing that for Tyrese Halliburton, because I was like, you know, he really knocks down shots.
It's hard. Yeah, it's hard.
I started doing it.
Interesting.
Because I just watch his mechanics and like how he shoots the ball, where he puts his limbs, but it works. I mean, like, I was shooting like 34 footers, you know. It's like you can get so much. I don't really know how to describe it. It's almost like Peja Stojakovic, how you could kind of do that slingshot motion.
Yeah.
It's so easy to load into it and then just fire away and like spot up with. I thought it was pretty interesting though, but Green's no chance. The only time I move my legs like that is if I'm jumping hard.
And yeah, there you go.
Yeah, box very, very strange. Very, very strange. Not even box jumps, like full loading, like I'm going for max vert. That's the only time I'm moving my knees in at all. So, yeah, very strange lower body. But moving on to the Bay guys, some of my favorite wings in this class. I like to hear your thoughts about Sadiq Bay. I'm kind of more, I like to consider myself a Tyler Bay expert, but
yeah,
I want to hear your thoughts on Sadiq.
I've been, and we'll get to Bay in a, Tyler Bay in a second. Sadiq Bay is, he's, I mean, I think he's a, again, almost kind of like Green in terms of having a safe skill set. And this is why I like the end of the first round, early second round so much in this draft. And I'm not saying these are, this is where these guys are going to be drafted, because it's very possible that Green and Bay even go lottery in some cases or top 20.
Yeah.
But if, you know, picking either one of these guys at the end of the late first round is immense value in my opinion, because they fit so well on, you know,
in many situations,
contenders.
Yeah.
I was literally searching for the word, but contenders. They fit extremely well on contenders with their skill set. And Bay, although he has another guy with a really interesting shot, in my opinion, the way he leans forward and his lower body works, but really I think definitely 45% doesn't lie. 3-point shooting is going to translate for Sadiq Bay. I'm a movement critic on him. And although he did show flashes of being able to be a really, really solid defender at Villanova, I do feel like Villanova's scheme and play style of having tremendous help defense in such great discipline under Coach Jay Wright, that it did mask a lot of his deficiencies guarding primaries and point guards and whatnot.
Well said. I think I don't think I could say about it regarding his impact. I have some worries defensively. I think he's going to be similar to Neesmith as far as a guy that's going to be on the wing that's going to have to rely on volume shooting from deep to provide a lot of value. I don't really buy him as a creator, and I don't really buy him as a plus defender right now. He could, of course, get better, because it's hard to bet against Villanova wings. I have a propensity to kind of root for them just because, they always seem to be my type of players, but definitely has a lot of room to improve defensively. Unlike Tyler Bay, who is probably arguably, again, top tier defenders in this class. I'd put him in the same tier as Okoro, Avdija, Vassell.
Wow.
I think he's that good. Every time I watched him, and I watched almost, I think, every single one of his games, he was a phenomenal defender. I mean, one of the best in college basketball, I think, and one of the most impactful as well. Just crazy, crazy smart off ball. Very good on the ball. He can be a disruptor, an event generator. And at 6'7", I think he could be 6'8".
He definitely seems like it.
Yeah, I even if he's 6'7", though, as a wing. And I know he did play as a four a lot in Colorado's system, but his spot is undoubtedly at the wing, the next level.
Yes.
And his swing skill is going to be his shot and his shooting volume. And while he did shoot 42% on paper this year, he only shot 31 three-pointers. So the real big thing he's going to need to do is improve his volume. And while that was partially due to him being – a guy that was supposed to run, be a screener, kind of be a glue guy at the glue guy four spot, because he doesn't handle the ball really. He doesn't pass very well, but he does have his flashes, of course, as most guys do. But he's gonna be, I think, the 3-and-D wing that's gonna provide some of the most value in this class, and he's. On my board right now, he's 16, which I think is some of the highest I've seen. But, rebounds at a really high rate, can defend any position, I think, except for some fives and some ones. So I think he could really be like a 3.5 position defender, maybe four position. And
yeah,
as good as he is off the ball, he's just got so much defensive value to hang his hat on. It's just like, yeah, there's no way he's going to fail. Even if he's a non-shooter, he's going to have a winning impact. And that's what I like about Tyler Bay.
You mentioned at the very end there, I was waiting for you to say it, but he fires me up because he's just one of those guys, and there's not like an immense amount in this class, but he's just one of those guys that makes winning plays. And yeah. I love players that make winning plays. Sounds pretty general, but like it's true. Like it's like he just makes the right play, the play that you don't expect him to make that benefits his team so greatly, whether that's grabbing two offensive rebounds instead of one on a possession, mm-hmm. or being in the absolute best possible spot to stop a 3-on-1 break. He does all that. And please go read Alex's report on him, because I think that's one of the first things I read from you was Tyler Bay back in March or so when I joined Overtime Heroics, was your Tyler Bay report. And I mentioned I've been watching a lot of LBTU recently, but I've been watching a lot of just Pac-12 in general. And mm-hmm. I've gone through a lot of Colorado. And again, even I think today, watching Colorado, Kansas, and there was, like I said, there was a possession where not only did he grab one offensive rebound, but two offensive rebounds, and then made a terrific pass out to McKinley right in the corner to knock down a three. And it was a game-changing possession for Colorado. They still lost the game, but it was in the first half. And those kind of winning plays, he's going to fit so well on a contender. You can just I honestly wouldn't be mad if Milwaukee took him at 19 at all.
Oh God, that'd be beautiful value.
It's just a great fit. And so I think I'm really looking forward to Tyler Bay's future, because although he's on the older side, he's, again, another one of these dudes that's a definitive positive impact, in my opinion.
Definitely. And talking about the older side, I think him and Toppin are going to be around the same age draft night. So definitely keep that in mind, anyone who's listening. He's not – and his ceiling isn't really going to be much higher than he is now, except volume shooting, like increasing his volume. But what I also like about him is he plays with an edge while he's in his role. You know, kind of like Daniel Gafford does, as far as just being, he gets himself fired up. Not as much as Gafford. I think that's a bit much, but as far as comparing to Bay, but he plays emotional. He's tough. His coaches really describe him that way. He's like, he's a tough kid. That's a vibe I get from him. And he's also a great vertical athlete. And I don't think that gets talked about much. He doesn't need much room to load, and he can finish plays, kind of at the dunker spot even.
Yeah.
And he's really fluid in space. I just, his real issue is shooting and hand, his shooting and his handling are things he's going to really need to work on. But I'm a huge Tyler Bay fan. He's going to be a winner no matter what. So buy stock now.
Yeah. Again, this is why the value in this class is, and you're talking about all these guys, they're all going to be, I think like we mentioned, really, really good role players, which is what you have to buy into with the 2020 NBA draft class. And that's just putting it shortly. But that's what, that's what you have to do. You have to buy into this class as guys who are going to contribute in different ways than putting up 25 points per game or so. So moving on here, though, two late additions are Boise State guys, Derek Alston Jr. and your guy Justinian Jessup. Two pretty interesting prospects. I think there's a good chance that Alston goes back for one more year at Boise State, although we'll see what happens. But Derek Alston, really interesting in terms of a big guard, a big wing, 6'9", needs to fill out. But with some defensive, I think upside and flashes that
upside
he showed at Boise
State.
Upside
is all it is right now.
defensive. I'm just talking. I think it's a little bit more than upside for me, because although he doesn't need work on that end, I did see solid flashes of him using his length and other skills to contribute and make an impact on that end. But again, offensively, it's going to be can he improve as a defender? Can he become better from outside? Because his playmaking package, ball handling, ability to get to the rim is really interesting.
Yeah, it's enticing to have a 6'9" guy that's basically a 2'3". And I think those guys need to hang their hat on defense, you know, have that, because that's really where their versatilities should be. And Alston has some worries defensively. I mean, less than 1% steal and block rates, negative defensive impact on multiple metrics. So that's really what I worry about with Alston. But, you know, again, just it's all intriguing to have a 6'9", you know, kind of almost a guard, but close to, he's basically a wing. And, he's just intrigue for me now. That's kind of all he is. I thought Jessup was the best player on Boise State, without a doubt.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he was a positive defender, despite being, 6'7". I mean, not 6'7", but like not the most athletic guy in the world. You know, a guy that's had multiple knee, lower body injuries. I think he's going to have value as a wing shooter. You know, just a crazy, crazy marksman.
He's a sniper. He's a sniper. Yeah. He's an absolute sniper.
He's a sniper. You know, career 6 3-pointers a game on a 41% clip. Like, that's just – awesome. He shot 96% from the free throw line this year.
Yeah. So there's your indicator. There's your indicator that he's going to be a good shooter. Like, I can promise
he's going to be a good shooter. Yeah. At the very least, he's going to be a 6'7" good shooter. And guys that can shoot on the wing and stretch the floor are going to have value. And I really like to see, I'm really enjoying seeing the rise of Justinian Jessup around the community. Because I really enjoyed covering him back in, I think it was April. But, he's going to have an NBA role. And if not, there are top European teams that are going to be begging for him to come over.
He's going to be a great European player, in my opinion. I think that's not something to knock on him either. Like, I think he's just going to be a fantastic player out there with his shooting prowess or shooting gravity. But
I think he's
like
going to try NBA first.
Oh, absolutely. I agree that there is an NBA role for him. I watched him recently on the PBC when they put out his film session, which I thought was really cool. And reading your report on him as well. Jessup is he's a smart guy. He's a really smart guy.
Yeah.
Intelligent.
Really articulate. He
knows the game. Coming from a true shooter, I'm sure you can join me on this, but that's how I played. I was a shooter when I played in high school and AAU, and pointing out the things that he pointed out, it was almost like simultaneous at times. Whether that's coming off the screen or just getting to your spot and wanting guys to hit you in the shooting pocket. I think you mentioned that or something of that nature. He's a true shooter at heart, and he plays to that role. I like flashes of his in-between game. I thought he showed the ability to be able to hit a floater or two or make something happen off the bounce. And again, he's 6'7", so he was long around the rim occasionally. I agree with you that he was the best player on Boise State this year, and I'm excited for his future because he's someone that should continue to rise as even an undrafted guy. Someone who I would love to see in Summer League, because I think he'd light it up.
Me too. Yeah. Rip Summer League, man. Feels bad. But the one real thing I have against Jessup is his ability to play at the rim. His lack of lower body strength and athleticism is notable, to say the least. And he does miss some easy layups sometimes that are you just can't write off, can't miss. But I don't think he's going to need to be a guy that's going to play around the rim a lot to provide value. So definitely big on Jessup. So let's get into McDaniels and Woodard, I think, and then kind of talk about maybe a few of our favorite late round, second round kind of guys, and then get into questions and all that.
Yes, sir.
All right.
So Jaden McDaniels, again, someone that we haven't talked about on this podcast, but a really interesting mainstream sweetheart, and everyone likes to compare him to Brandon Ingram and Kevin Durant. And it's just like, no.
I said no. Stop. But, get some help.
I do remember when I read a breakdown on him, but it mentioned something really good about there's like a beauty in Jaden McDaniels. It was a PD Web. If you're listening to this, it was a great article on him, and I really enjoy reading his deep dives into guys. But Jaden McDaniels, he mentioned the song April 14th, which is it's a love song, but it like displays tragedy. And I'm getting all Renaissance on the podcast, but it's what it is. And it made sense to me. It made sense to me. It's pure piano. It's a pure piano song, fully instrumental. But it kind of just describes beauty in the madness. And that's what it is with Jaden McDaniels. Like, he has a lot to like in terms of being a 6'10 guy that show flashes of being a pull-up shooter and versatile defensively and using his length and being impactful in certain areas. But there's also, you know, just the tragedy of him, you know, not knocking down shots at a high clip whatsoever, and, you know, having these frustrating lapses and seeming uncoachable and having bad body language at times. You can go on and on. So there's really two sides to it with McDaniels, and it's all about how he matures, in my opinion.
Definitely.
And continues to progress as a shot maker.
Yeah. He's probably arguably the biggest project of the notable top 60 wings, my opinion. I think that, yeah, I don't see a way that he isn't going to spend a lot of time in the G League unless he really improves as a defender fast. He is a long road to success, but there's a road, I guess, is the right way to put it.
Yeah, I agree with you there. Robert Woodard, we mentioned, we're going to talk about him. You're a little bit higher than I am on Woodard. I've kind of stayed at the same place, and I went back through some of his film, and I'm not the most, you know, sold on him, but he does have an interesting skill set. So I'd like to hear why. I think if I'm not wrong, you're still a little bit higher than I am on Woodard. I have him in the 45.
Oh yeah, I'm in like 20s.
Yeah,
for me right now. So what I like about Woodard is, first of all, a guy that can be he's like 6'7", 230. Can play either forward spot, even though he's listed as a guard on like Sport Reference or whatever. He's a combo forward.
Yes.
He improved his ability to stretch the floor. His free throws are bad. I think he needs to improve still as a shooter, but the flashes this year were encouraging. What I really like about him is his potential defensive versatility and his low usage offensive impact and his intangibles. From all the sources I've heard, he's a really coachable, the guy you kind of want in the locker room. He's going to work hard, provide a winning impact. The thing that holds me back on, you know, betting on him being more than a role player is I don't think he has the defensive floor that some of the other wings do to justify his low usage offensive play, if that makes sense.
Yes, makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. So he's still kind of an idea to me, a guy that's going to be a high intangible, high motor guy that can be a rotation rim protector. And he's kind of like why you're high on Pat Will. I kind of have some of that with Woodard. You know, gotcha. The shot's not all the way there, but I still kind of buy it. He provides impact on defense, but not a superb impact, but there's potential versatility there. Not a high option guy offensively, but he has his traits that they're kind of promising. Not a playmaker, but he makes good decisions. So it's like he's still kind of an idea to me. And the reason I'm not higher on him is the same reason I'm not higher on Patrick Williams. I just think he's in that same category, maybe not the same tier, of course, but the same category of prospects.
Okay, so yeah, I mean, I was gonna bring something similar, but like the reason I'm lower on Woodard is for all of those same reasons. Is that I really just I don't think he's going to become a really good 3-point shooter by any means, and I feel like he's really got to craft into that 3-and-D mold. But it is good to know, or good to hear about his intangibles and his off court strengths, if you will. Because that's a solid part of a prospect that I didn't know about him. I think he's someone that's 100% draftable. He's got an interesting skill set for sure. He's going to stay 45 to 50 on me because I don't think he even has a really good skill yet. And you can make the argument that he will develop one, but you know, I'm more cautious on a guy like that than I am Pat Will, who I'm kind of going all in on, if you will.
That's interesting. And I get that sentiment. I think he is, again, still kind of an idea and of what he can be. And, it's only second season. So I think he could get a lot better. I think he has the upside to be an impact role player. But he is an interesting evaluation.
For sure.
So, who do you want to talk about next?
I wanted to touch on Jordan Wara because I feel like that's someone we haven't discussed on the show yet. And he's really interesting to me. I personally, he's one of the guys, one of the few guys that I don't have the greatest idea of what I want to do with him or where I want to place him. Because there's some signs that could point towards him being a late first round guy, and other signs that, you could have him late second round, or anywhere in between. And I think he's a really interesting, obviously, shot maker, and that's what he was known for at Louisville, is kind of being that scorer, and doesn't have elite burst, but super crafty, gets to his spots, can knock down shots from all three levels, competitive, seems all the signs point towards really good intangibles, good off the court stuff. So I'm struggling to, to know what to do with him, because you just wonder if any of that's going to be elite at the NBA level.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a similar archetype as Sadiq Bey. Again, it's not going to be a major plus defensively, but could be a volume shooter at, 6'7" on the wing. That's what he's going to hang his hat on is, he is an elite shooter. I don't think he's as far along as a guy like, Neesmith or anything, anywhere close to that, but he's a really good shooter. And having a guy that's 6'7" that can shoot the ball like he can and make an impact on the defensive glass, is that's what he's going to hang his hat on. I just don't know if it's going to be as valuable as a guy as, some of these other guys.
Yeah. I agree with you there. So he's someone that I'm still struggling to place, just placing value and whatnot, because another guy who's going to fit really well on a contender, I feel like you could say about that about a lot of guys in the draft class, but him especially, bringing his skill set to a team that needs off-the-bench scoring or off-the-bench shooting could potentially be a nice fit. So I just wanted to go, I don't know if you want to mention someone else, but I wanted to talk about Chris Smith real fast. Because we talked about Derek Alston, and honestly, they have some similarities in terms of, body type and kind of, archetype, if you will. Again, Chris Smith, I believe he's listed at 6'9", pretty slender frame, in my top 60, because I even buy him not only as a big wing, but kind of as that big guard, with his handle. And the biggest thing with Smith is that he lacks downhill burst. He lacks, the ability with his slender frame to really wreak havoc around the rim and be an elite self-creator. But he does some really nice things on the basketball court. And I think, his shooting mechanics, his shooting projection is really – I really buy it. Like I'm in on his shot, and I think if he starts to fill out some other things, you're looking at a real sleeper in this class. based off his size and his kind of unique skill set, if you will.
Yeah, and you know, I'm not as optimistic on Chris Smith. What I do like, again, having a wing with, you know, at 6'9" with the skill set he has, you know, can handle, shoot, and all that. I think he needs to improve a lot on the defensive end, and I think there's a path there, but I don't think it's going to be immediate. I think he's going to be a guy that's going to come up in the G League and, you know, be a high option scorer there that's going to get NBA minutes as, you know, subsequently. Yeah, that's I'm just, again, he's quite a project to me.
I agree with you, but that he's a project. Yeah. But I think the biggest difference, what I'm hearing, is that you're not as in on his jump shot. And I personally, at least where I value it, is that I think if he's able to consistently knock down outside shots, that's going to open up the rest of his game. And he has good shooting projection. I believe over 80% at the free throw line this year. Solid clip, solid volume. And watching him, he did it off the dribble. He did it off step backs, off pull-ups, off the catch. So did it in a variety of ways while taking some high volume. So I'm definitely interested in Smith. He's someone I'm pretty confident in saying that if I had picks 50 to 60, he'd be top priority there. Because I'd feel pretty comfortable in drafting him and maybe even letting him develop a year or two in a G League system and then potentially becoming an interesting contributor for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, I think that bench scoring role is probably where he might end up. Again, I really just need to see more to get a better sense. I didn't watch a lot of UCLA this year. But, you know, having a 6'9 guy with his skill set it's intriguing. But that's all it is right now, is intriguing to me. It's like, I just need to get some more solid, concrete impact that I think is going to last. And I typically look for that in defense or shooting. And since neither of those are elite for me, you know, he's kind of a creator. And I'm just like, it's just not as I'm not all the way there yet.
Yeah,
I get it.
I respect that. So, do you want to go one more that you want to point out here, and before we move on to our next point?
Yeah, sure. Just a note. You know, there are so many wings and such in this draft. We couldn't cover them all in one episode. So, if there were any that we didn't go over that you'd like to hear about, let us know. You know, we can get back to you either on podcast or on like Twitter. We can give you our opinions there. But one guy I would like to talk about, because I feel I have rather controversial opinion on him, and I'm all for that, is Aaron Henry. Okay. And Aaron Henry out of Michigan State is, you know, he's a 6'6", 210-pound comp, like, you know, he's a combo wing. He's the 2-3.
Yeah.
And I see a lot of guys getting him top 30, even in this class. And I just don't think he does anything special. And I know I think he has some defensive chops that are going to be, but he definitely benefited from being on a very good Michigan State team defensively. But other than being a good defender, I don't really see where else he provides a ton of value. I mean, he was a positive defensively, but he wasn't really an event generator. He was just a positive, I suppose. He didn't do much offensively. He's, 10 points per game, pretty mediocre shooting numbers with, you know, 44% from the field and 34% from deep on rather low volume. Didn't get to line very often or execute at a high level. Just kind of like, I don't see him being anything more than a low rotation guy or a mid rotation guy at best. Cause I just don't see why you put him on the floor other than have just a competent, you know, maybe player. Slight plus defender, but he's going to be, I don't think he's going to be a plus offensively at the NBA level. So I'm curious to hear your thoughts and anyone else who's listening. Cause I am not sold at all on Aaron Henry. I think he was by far third, fourth tier on the Michigan State team as far as talent.
Yeah, Winston and Tillman far ahead of him, I think. And
far,
so,
far ahead.
Far ahead. And even we talked about pre-show Rocket Watts. So, but Aaron Henry, he's interesting to me, and I've moved down on him a little. I had him in the 50s range, and now I have him, I believe, 68 or 70.
Yeah, he's in my 80s, I think.
Where I do differentiate from you is I think he's a pretty – almost like maybe a step below elite point of attack defender, which is where I see the intrigue with Henry. I guess that is his thing. And something that people are buying is that he's going to be he's going to morph into grow, develop into an elite point of attack defender, which is I'll give you pretty valuable at the NBA level. However,
it's not as valuable as like a team defender though.
Right, you know? And he didn't. And that's when we talk about overall defense. That's the point I'm getting to. Is that you're right.
I see.
He's not. He didn't show complete defensive equity because he was sometimes a lost cause off the ball and. He was immature, not in the sense of being off the court immature, but on the court, making a lot of kind of young guy mistakes. And you'd see, I mean, the thing about Henry is he's so interesting, and I just want him to do one more year at Michigan State because then I'd feel a lot more comfortable drafting him in the second round. Because I do think his archetype is valuable. He's a guy, a prototype 3-and-D wing that needs to fill out in both the 3 and the D. So, you know, but he has these flashes of either dunking on someone, making an extreme athletic play, or, you know, doing something out of the ordinary that you're like, okay, yes, this is why he needs to be drafted. This is why he warrants a draft spot. But it's flashes. It's not what he's consistently doing. So yeah. I'm hoping he just goes back to school and has one more year because, again, another guy, I was really interested in watching the PBC on him, and I did. I watched the full thing. Super mature, super knowledgeable about the game. I definitely recommend it if you haven't seen it. It's kind of just opposite from how he was on the court, which was often immature, not in terms of his body language or anything, but just his decision-making and some of his positioning, you know, losses and whatnot.
Yeah, I get that. And definitely go check out that PBC breakdown. John does a great job.
Yeah, but Alex makes a great point that if you didn't hear us talk about the wing that you were interested in, send us a Twitter DM, mention on Twitter. We'll either cover it in the next podcast or reply to you. But we're just going to get right to the questions to end off the show because we're going a little bit over. But again, thank you for the questions. That you guys put out. It's been awesome getting at least a few every single week. Super interesting. Yeah. And I think it challenges us to kind of think deeper and at times. So number one here from Zach Smith, do you think Vassell can operate well in a high usage role? I don't think he's there as a creative, not as a high usage role on offense. And that's just not on a winning team right now.
I'm not all the way there in his creation package.
That's not what I like about his game. That's not what I buy with Devin Vassell. Is a high usage role other than maybe high volume 3-point attempts or other things. But I would say no to that.
Yeah, his value comes from being a guy that can thrive in low usage offensive situations. Be like a tertiary creator. A guy that can spot up, play on and off the ball a little bit. You know, he doesn't need to be a guy that needs a lot of touches to show his value because his main value is going to be defensively. So
yeah.
I'm totally comfortable having him spot up and just play awesome defense because he's going to provide value while his shot creation package develops because his creation package is more just like getting guys on their heels and pulling up in their face. There's not a lot there for NBA value, at least yet. You know, guys can change. He's a young guy. He's 20, 21. So, you know, he could get there. I'm not buying him as a guy that I'm going to put the ball in his hands a whole lot.
Yeah, I feel you. Yeah. Another one here from Alex Caruso, MVP. I like this one. Can you talk about Elijah Hughes, Chris Smith, and possibly Tyler Bay? So, yeah, we'll talk about Elijah Hughes. But his follow-up question is Bay's potential defensive impact so good that it outweighs Hughes and Smith's offensive upside? I would say absolutely yes.
Yes, and it's not even close.
Yeah,
it's
absolutely.
Not even close, in my opinion.
And then he also adds in that he could see Bay as the perfect fit in Houston's small ball five. I just want to address I agree with you there, Alex Caruso, MVP, but I think there's like three or four guys that I've like labeled that Houston small ball five in this class. I think it's been Epons, Emmett Williams, and Precious. But yeah, definitely. I mean, his skill set, we kind of talked about it, is contender proof. Like that he's going to fit really well on a contender or in any situation, to be honest, because he makes winning plays and he's going to have a high impact on low usage.
Yeah, and I have the propensity to value those guys more because they're going to be surefire impact winners on teams that are going to be potentially contending, and that's more valuable to me than a high usage guy on a losing team, in my opinion. But I think his value defensively is that strong. I would not put him in a small ball five because he can get pushed around by bruisers.
Right.
One of the things you see small ball fives succeed with is having really strong lower bodies, be able to push bigs off their spots. You don't really have that with Tyler Bay. You have a guy that's going to use his length and superior anticipation to make plays off the ball. As a post defender, I know the post isn't a high usage thing anymore, but he's not a one-on-one defender in the interior, at least not in space. That's one area you can actually almost exploit him in sometimes because you can muscle him, and that's not where he's at his best. I want him as an off-ball guy that's going to be a rotating rim protector. It's going to wreak havoc in passing lanes and use his superior defensive skill set.
Yes. Yeah, and then about Elijah Hughes, just quickly going over him. He's someone he's going to stay in my second round. He's a priority second round guy, if you will. His mix of athleticism, scoring, ball handling is really interesting. I think he's a prime, just again, fitting into the mold of this class. He's a prime guy that is prone to make a really positive impact as a bench scorer. And I just want to mention, obviously Syracuse is what it is, right? It is what it is watching Syracuse. You're watching a 2-3. It's impossible, almost impossible to evaluate a prospect's defensive value and kind of gauge what they'll bring to the table because they're sitting in a 2-3. In Elijah Hughes' case, he sat at the bottom of the 2-3 most of the time. What I will say is that I did see flashes of him, and obviously what the main point of Syracuse defense is that these guards walk away with insane stat lines of, high blocks, high steals, because they just get their hands on everything at the top, and they're playing the passing lanes and whatnot. But it was really interesting to see Elijah Hughes from the baseline spot. I really felt was often in the right in the right spot on man-type drives, if you will, penetration drives to the right. And I believe an interesting stat is that he was up there amongst guards that blocked the highest percentage of three-point attempts this year, which I thought was pretty cool. So I think he does offer a little bit more value than maybe people will give him credit for, on defense. And that's ultimately what we're really just waiting to see with Elijah Hughes is what is he going to be on defense? What is he going to be when he's matched up against a man? Because I think his offensive shooting package and athleticism, ball handling, everything else that he brings to the table could make him an interesting guy in the second round.
Yeah. I really think he's just going to be a role player. Honestly, a guy that can, stretch the floor with the volume from the wing. It is going to be, a question of how is he going to defend at the next level. And comparing his, the guys in this archetype in this class, like Bay and Neesmith, and you'd want those guys in most cases, I would imagine,
yes,
over a guy like Hughes, just because those skills are more elite over there. And I just don't see Hughes as a high volume guy. He took, 15 shots a night and 7 from deep, and I don't know.
He's not going to get that. He's not going to get that.
Yeah,
at the next level.
Yeah, I don't think he provides as much value as a low usage guy as some of these other players do. So that's where I'm at with him.
He's going to have to provide value in a smaller sample, a smaller size of shooting and whatnot. Next question here from Koozie. I love this question. Who is your sixth man of the year candidate from draft? I was gonna say Mr. Kyra Lewis Jr. from Alabama. I think he's kind of my favorite for that sixth man role. Because I honestly think that's his floor. That's where I'm at. But it also could be his ceiling, which kind of shows you where his median outcome is. Is that like that sixth man scoring punch off the bench, with playmaking upside. He's a great prospect. We talked a lot more in depth than on him point guard podcast. So check that out.
Yeah. So they say this year's like.
Yeah.
Or this. Okay.
I believe so.
So talking about guys that are going to make an immediate impact and be high option bench guys, or at least high rotation, I should say, not high option. Tyler Bay would be one of my top picks.
Because he's gonna
be a great defender from day one.
Agreed.
I see him providing instant value. Same with Vassell. Even though I think Vassell might start lower. But let's see. If I had to be I want to be more controversial, I could say maybe Mason Jones if he's given a shot on a lower team.
Yeah. Maybe Maxey.
He could be a high usage guy. Yeah, maybe Maxey. I think Jones has potential to be like a high usage bench player that can be an initiator, at the one or two spot. And if he goes to a team that needs a second unit engine, he might be a guy that puts up high numbers. So,
right.
Or he might just go to the G League, or you never know. But
right,
yeah, Bay, right. Jones, those are kind of guys I'm fingers crossed for. You know, assuming guys like Avdi are going to end up as starters and all that.
Yeah. Next one here from Matteo Zanchi. I think I'm saying that right. Thanks for the question. Best ball handling wing in the draft. And there was a little bit of discussion under this. Someone said Jared Butler. Another guy said the best ball handling wings are guards. And it all kind of just depends on who you classify as a wing, because it could – I mean, my safe pick would probably be Denny, maybe.
So the thing about Avdija is I don't think he has a creation handle yet. You know, if you look him try to size guys up, he doesn't have a lot of shake.
Yeah.
He's great in the open court, and he has, really solid control, but – and I don't know. I just don't see him as a number one ball handler right now. He has a lot of work to do, and I think he could get there, but he's not there right now. I think if you classify Okoro as a wing, he'd be up there. He has a strong handle. You say Bane?
I think Bane would be up there for me.
Yeah. Yeah, I was about to say. I was like, him or Bane, but you could argue they're secondary guards as well, so.
It's an interesting question. Maybe even if you're classifying Anthony Edwards as a wing, he could be in discussion.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. But I'm kind of more towards initiator, creator kind of guy. But offensive initiator, I should say. But, it's a good question. I think it's, going to be the guys that are closer to that 2-3 kind of spot, or 2.5 rather.
Right.
I'd pick Okoro probably. If that's the case.
And then our last question here from Simon Rath. Again, weekly questioner on the podcast.
We
appreciate that,
Simon.
And just put out a really interesting draft kit yesterday.
Definitely check that out.
Put a lot of work into it. It's really good. So he asked, I saved this one for last, how long have y'all been into the NBA draft, and how did you decide you wanted to write about it?
You want to go first?
I've ever since I stopped playing basketball in high school, I was like, okay, well, I still want to be around basketball. I don't know how, So let me like continue to evaluate basketball in some sense, because I felt that's all I did when I played was evaluate other opponents, evaluate other teams, you know, find their strengths and weaknesses. That's why, in my opinion, I was a really high IQ player. And I think that translated to me wanting to, in my opinion, right? I think that translated to me wanting to, you know, get my thoughts out there on the NBA draft, because I had done it in the past. Definitely. I had made big boards by myself, but this is my first real year diving into it, getting out there, putting my content out, and I've really enjoyed it. I'm hoping that I can make it a future.
We're all glad you did.
Yeah, I'm hoping that I can make it a future, because I do really enjoy evaluating and just talking about guys on this podcast, and it's I think for me it's super interesting to project the future of the NBA and the guys that could come into it, and it gets me fired up and it gets me enticed, and so that's why I kind of continued and chose to put my stuff out there on it.
Yeah, I'm in a very similar boat, and again, definitely glad you started covering guys. It's always good. Most NBA or even EuroLeague executives I talk to, the best way to get a foothold in the industry, or at least get some recognition, is to put the work out, you know, and let people see it. So it's a great decision. If you haven't started doing that, any listeners, you should. I probably started following the draft as soon as I stopped playing basketball as well, when I played in high school, I was 5 feet flat. So I was real short and I was a real late bloomer. And so I was always a guy that had to win with my mind. And I sat on the bench a lot and got to watch and think and, you know, help with kind of that, the scouting aspect. I did that in almost every sport I was a part of, not necessarily sitting on the bench, but it was like probably 2014. It was the Andrew Wiggins, Jabari Parker draft that I really started paying attention, because they'd been guys I've been watching for a long time. Yeah. And I was a Chicago guy, so like, you know.
Jabari.
Yeah, we were all for Jabari. But I had my worries. I still had. but again, you know, I didn't put the workout until I think I was coaching at the time. I was coaching youth basketball for the next couple of years. So I still was like learning to articulate the game. And once I got to college, my freshman year, I put my site up, HB Analytics, and just posted really rough scouting reports on not as detailed, not nearly the quality I do now, but they're more just like notes and such. And I did that for about a year, and now it's just been getting better and better, getting more connected. And I've, you know, been doing it ever since. So probably like 2018 started really putting my stuff out there. But I've been following the draft for forever, since like 2014 probably. So
yeah, and
hope to continue doing that.
Yeah, and obviously everyone should go check out Alex's page and his stuff. And we've got some exciting things planned for the future as well that I think we're just going to keep under wraps for now. But you'll see what you know, we could be putting out. But I think I wanted to mention, what I like so much about evaluation and evaluating talent is that everyone can and should be able to have their own unique take and thoughts on a prospect, which is why if you're not putting out your opinion on guys, like, there's no reason to hold back, because anyone who wrongs you or says, oh, like, you're wrong for this opinion, like, is not open to, I believe, improving themselves as an evaluator. Everyone can have their own opinion. That's the beauty of it, is kind of finding these guys that are, you know, maybe not as highly touted, but, you know, saying, okay, I evaluated him and I projected his skill set to be valuable, if you will, and that's what he turned out to be. And that's kind of what I realized. I think, again, coupled with the fact that, you know, it's just it's fun to do. It's fun to project.
Yeah, it's fun.
Yeah, the future of the NBA, like I said.
Yeah, it really is, and hope we can continue doing that as we move forward.
Absolutely, yes. next week, like we mentioned, we will be back talking about kind of the off-ball guards of this class, yeah, which is really guys. the last position or archetype or role, if you will, because we've gone over wings, point guards, and bigs. Talking about these off-ball guys is going to be what we're focused on next week, and then we'll kind of progress and continue as the road to October continues. It should have been summer league this week.
I know. Feels bad.
Yeah, it's tough. So, appreciate the support. If you like this podcast, leave a like, subscribe, leave us a nice review, whatever you got to do to make sure that you're in tune with us. Follow us on Twitter at Prospect Pod. I love the questions that we get, love interacting with our audience, and appreciate everyone who's supporting us and listening. You can follow Alex on Twitter at HB Analytics. Follow me on Twitter at Ethan Piotta, and we'll see you next week.
Thank you, guys.